I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about an industry that becomes more important to Indiana and its citizens every day. We're going to talk about the life sciences industry, about why Indiana has become a leader in that field, and what the future will hold for it. My guests will be David Johnson, president of BioCrossroads, Darren Carroll, vice president of corporate development for Eli Lilly, and Dr. Marietta Harrison, associate vice president for research at Purdue University. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indiana's life sciences industry. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are David Johnson, who is the president of BioCrossroads. David, welcome to the program.
John, thank you. Very good to be here today.
It's good to have you here. Darren Carroll, who is the vice president of corporate development at Eli Lilly. Darren, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Great to join No Limits.
Good to have you here. And Dr. Marietta Harrison, who is the associate vice president for research at Purdue University. Marietta, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. It's just a delight to be here.
It's good to have you here. Well, I'm going to start. We probably ought to define this as life sciences obviously commands, an increasing amount of attention and support here in the state. But it's one of those terms people throw around without a clear definition. So I'm going to start maybe with Marietta and just say, could you give us a definition so we get started where people understand what we're talking about when we talk about the life sciences?
Well, I think foremost, John, what we think about as life sciences are living things, from plants to people. And I think in Indiana especially, we have such a diverse segment of life science industries that it gives us a huge advantage because we have very focused interests in agriculture, for instance, in pharmaceuticals, for instance, biomedical devices. So it's very diverse, but it just really has to do with living things from plants to humans.
David, why is this so important to Indiana? Why has the development of this industry been so important to Indiana?
Marietta's touched on the first part, which is we're already very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the areas she mentioned, we also make a lot of orthopedic devices, for example, up in Warsaw.
Three out of the top five
in the world are in Little Warsaw, Indiana, a town of 17,000 with 7,000 in one industry.
Who would have predicted that?
And, you know, the Cook folks down in Bloomington give the orthopedic folks a fair run with Cook Group, which is the largest privately held cardiovascular device company in the world. So that's here. Roche, for example, which makes all kinds of diagnostic instruments and tools, are here. And I think the other part of life sciences that's important to tie some of this together, maybe for more of your listeners, is healthcare is part of this. So increasingly, you see not only the great academic medical center at IU, but hospitals across the state are really participating in clinical innovation, medical innovation, developing products that save lives and make the quality of life better.
Why, Darren Carroll, though, why Indiana? I mean, there are other states, obviously, where there, you would think the ground would be similarly fertile for this kind of growth. What's made it specific to Indiana?
Yeah, John, I think that's a great question. I think there are several things that Indiana has going in its favor. First of all is breadth. Right? There are very few states in the country, and in fact, very few countries, that actually have the breadth of life sciences companies that you see here in Indiana, many of the same companies that David just referred to and you did as well. There's also depth, right? We've got world leaders in each of these areas, and we are supplemented by great research universities. That makes a big, big difference, right? If you don't have great research universities, it's very hard to sustain in an innovation-based environment.
We are talking about the life sciences industry here in Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Darren, I'm going to stay with you for a second. Why? Well, I want to give people some idea of the scope of this. How important is the life sciences industry right now to Indiana's economy, to its economic growth, its picture? As obviously a representative from one from a huge company, I think you can probably give us the best.
You know, there are a lot of ways of looking at that, John. One is you just look at direct jobs. So there are something on the order of 50,000 direct jobs in the state of Indiana that are directly tied to the life sciences industry. The mistake, though, that we could make is just assuming that all the life sciences jobs are held by people with PhDs and white lab coats, and we surely have those, and we really need those, and the industry depends on those folks, our great technologists, our great engineers, our great scientists. What the industry also does, though, it has a huge knock-on effect. So just take Eli Lilly. We spend the better part of $1 billion every year with partners throughout the state of Indiana. In fact, dozens and dozens of counties throughout the entire state have vendors for whom a significant part of their revenue and thus a significant part of their employment is based on the relationship that they have with Lilly. In addition to all those other kinds of impacts, you've got a lot of services companies throughout the state that provide services not just inside the state, but of course throughout the entire country, in fact, throughout the world. So this is really an ecosystem that offers just tremendous opportunity and wealth throughout the state. And that gets to the final point, and that is these jobs are actually pretty high-paying jobs, right? So as we look at the future of the state of Indiana, we need to make sure that we're providing great high-paying jobs for the kind of young students that Marianne and her colleagues are going to be graduating every year. We've got to make sure that there are opportunities for those great students so they don't all leak out and we don't become a continual net exporter of great talent. But we also need to make sure that we've got a great tax base for the state, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, these companies and the wages that they pay provide a great amount of wealth throughout the state and support governments and support industry and support things like WFYI and other cultural treasures
that we have here. Thank you. David Johnson, obviously it's a big business already, but part of the reason, the premise for doing this show is that it's getting even bigger,
right?
Growing constantly. You know, how much larger are we likely to see it get?
Well, a great question. To compare where we are, it's about a $50 billion a year industry in the state right now, so it's a huge outsized driver of the economy. Darren mentioned salaries. It pays more than twice the average Hoosier salary is typical.
So what is the average salary?
Average life science company salary is clocking in pretty close to $90,000 a year. Average Hoosier per capita is about $39,400.
So it's actually close to two and a half times.
It is getting closer, yes.
It's definitely at least two and a quarter.
And at the same time, if you comparatively, maybe it's best to think about a map of the U.S., if you look at the life science industry we have here, in terms of the number of people who work in it and the number of companies we have, there are only four other states that have the concentration that we do of those in those two categories: New Jersey, North Carolina, California, and Massachusetts. Those are much bigger states than we are. We also, to Darren's earlier point, have three great research universities, Purdue, Notre Dame, and Indiana University, within our 7 million people in the state. So there is no state in the country that has a bigger collection of people and companies working in this sector in a smaller geography and, frankly, involving people who know each other, work together, and work pretty well together. We think that's one of our big strengths.
When we talk about the average compensation being pretty close to $90,000, what's the median?
That's a great question, I don't know the answer to that. Obviously, the upside salaries in this sector
drive that average number up.
And virtually all of the starting salaries are above the average wage for Hoosiers.
So what the baseline salaries would be, you know, probably somewhere around the average salary?
Yeah, somewhere. And again, it depends on the sector. And more in pharmaceuticals, a little bit less in devices, but again, an unparalleled opportunity.
And Marietta, to prepare young people for these jobs, since it's obviously a growth industry, there's a demand for labor, I presume, skilled labor. Exactly what is the training involved in getting people ready for this work?
That's a good question, John, because it's very interdisciplinary now. And so at both IU and Notre Dame and Purdue, we offer lots of different courses, both specialty courses and interdisciplinary courses. So when you're marrying biology like we do with technology and great engineering, that kind of drives innovation. And that's the thing that we're most interested in educating our students about, how to get a very strong disciplinary foundation, but then to use that to interact with other segments to kind of drive the kind of innovation that we all believe this, the Life Sciences Institute, we haven't really talked about it yet, will foster and actually demand.
We are talking about the life sciences industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air. Says, in Northwest Indiana, specifically Elkhart, Miles Laboratories in more recent years Bayer, sits vacant as a former medical manufacturer. What can we do to bring more life science industries to other areas of the state and, in turn, more well-paying jobs? This growth has benefited Indianapolis, but it does seem not to have grown to other cities. I'll throw that one to David Johnson first. Everybody have a crack at it.
If I'm in Elkhart County, I think I go next door to Kosciuszko County because that's where Warsaw is.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the same skills that have driven the van conversion and automotive industry business, the machinists and technical skills, are also used in the orthopedic business and in the medical device industry. One of the things that's important to keep in mind about training, you asked that question earlier for these jobs, university training is very important, but so Ivy Tech has a role in this. Even high schools, frankly, have a role in this because you're talking about skilled machinists and technicians as well as people with PhDs. So the future of the pharmaceutical or any particular industry, devices, any of them, these are global companies. They sometimes do move, and that's one of the reasons it helps to be in a state like Indiana where we have some of all of those industries, pharmaceuticals, devices, diagnostics, agricultural innovation. So we've essentially hedged our bets against developments happening like the Bayer facility moving out.
Yes, Darren.
John, if I can add one more thing. I think your caller identifies a very important issue, and that is while we've done some really great things in the life sciences industry here in the state, whether it's in Dow AgroSciences or Eli Lilly or Biomet in various parts of the state, we cannot be satisfied with wherever we are today. The entire industry is growing and changing around the world, and when you open up a new life sciences company today, you're not competing with people down the street. You're competing with people in Suzhou, China. You're competing with people in Lyon, France. Mm-hmm. You're competing all over the world the minute you start working. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is you've got to take advantage of every opportunity that you can, which is actually a big part of what drove a group of us to help create the new Indiana Biosciences Research Institute. This is one of the next big things that we need to really focus on. We need to put big goals in front of ourselves, because otherwise we'll find ourselves falling behind just if we stand still.
Well, you mentioned that, the development of this new initiative. Could you tell me a little bit more about that, what the mission is?
Sure. The mission is actually fairly straightforward, and that is to build a group of truly world-class scientists who will be able to work in industry, university, research institute collaborations. They're going to focus in one or two particular areas of science, and those are the areas of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity, metabolic disorders, and nutrition. Those are all very closely connected based on their underlying biology, and they raise health issues that are actually particularly acute for Hoosiers.
We are talking about the life sciences industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. I'm going to reframe the listener's question a little bit here and just say, are there things that you need in a community to locate, to bring some of those life sciences? I mean, it sounds like a good educational system is important. What other things might be there? I'll stay with Darren on that one.
you need great technology to start with, right? So you've got to have great innovation, which is why our research universities and support for our research universities is so critical. So much of our basic research is done by places like Indiana University, Purdue, Notre Dame. You have to start there. Second is you've got to have great talent. It turns out you don't go far from the campus, I guess, to get those two things. You need risk capital. You need people who are willing to finance innovation because this is risky stuff, okay? Mm-hmm. We fail a lot more often than we succeed in this business. And you also need an overall climate that is conducive to this. So you need a tax structure, which in this state is actually very amenable to it. You need businesses that will work together, which also Indiana has got in abundance.
We are talking about Indiana's life sciences industry today on No Limits. My guests are David Johnson of BioCrossroads, Darren Carroll of Eli Lilly, and Marietta Harrison of Purdue University. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about Indiana's life sciences industry today on No Limits. My guests are David Johnson of BioCrossroads, Darren Carroll, who is with Eli Lilly, and Dr. Marietta Harrison of Purdue University. We were talking about the things that were important to locating, a life sciences business industry. In a community, education, have technology, all of that. In terms of the state, we've established, obviously, the state's become one of the leaders in the life sciences. But we talk about a $50 billion industry, jobs that pay wages that are 2.25 times, the average wage in Indiana and probably at least twice the national average as well. My guess is other states look around and think, we'd like to have some of that. We'd like to come get it. What do we need to do, A, not just to advance things in terms of the own state, but protect the hedge we've got? David Johnson.
There are many answers to that, but one of them certainly is that we need to do more to make being in Indiana useful and helpful and productive, especially for the companies who are here. And again, we've touched on the Institute. That is the latest example. BioCrossroads tries to look for these opportunities all the time. And that is, how can we develop collaborations? How can we bring more talent? How can we develop closer working relationships with the universities? All things that make it important for Eli Lilly and Company or Diagra Sciences or Biomet to be located in Indiana as opposed to Illinois or Kansas or California. And the good news about all that is that once you start that virtuous cycle of collaboration and people working together, it tends to build on itself. If you looked mm-hmm. at a map of the United States 15 years ago, when every state and every community in the country seemed to be having a biotech initiative and a desire to get into this area, and you looked at the same map today, it's pretty much the same places that are leading because you start with that critical mass and you try to build on it. And fortunately, we are one of those places.
Well, for example, how does a place like Warsaw, Indiana, people on the coast obviously would refer to that pretty much as ground zero for, flyover country. How does it become a leader internationally?
It first became a leader by good fortune. So you had a person named Reverend Depew decide to stop being a traveling salesman and set up a company there. Mm-hmm. And then another company started, and a supply chain gets built up. You hit a point, though, in a community like that, and Marietta mentioned this comment during the break, they have to continue to try to recruit the talent and the kind of diverse human talent from all over the world to move to Little Warsaw, Indiana, to work in that area. And so they start becoming much more concerned about issues like community amenities, the quality of schools, places to go for recreation, things that will make Warsaw, which again is a very small, fairly remote town in Indiana, a destination point for not only people that work in the orthopedics industry, but the kind of talent that wants to make that industry grow.
Darren, Marietta, either one of you, I'll throw that out. Picking up on David's point here, then, what are the biggest obstacles to recruiting the kind of talent to grow the industry that we need? I'll give Marietta the first crack at that, and I'll let Darren have a piece of it too.
Well, I think we've all mentioned it, the flyover problem, and that is a concern. On the other hand, I think we have a lot we offer in the Midwest. We've certainly seen this at Purdue when we're trying to recruit top talent. There are some people who really like to be able to concentrate on their science and concentrate on their technology and not have to commute, you know, 2 hours a day to get to work. But I think taken to the point that David mentioned, all of these things are kind of a package that you present to folks. And you present the great educational systems we have in the universities, the opportunities with the industry, the strong industry, the tax base that Darren mentioned, that's a favorable climate for all of this. And then you add together the just, you know, two big, huge research universities in IU and Purdue and then Notre Dame up north. That just exudes a culture around it and attracts a lot of people, the school systems, everything else. So there are obstacles, John, mm-hmm. but I think we've all dealt with them. I mean, we all know that we live in the middle of the plains and mm-hmm. and it's something that is a challenge, but I think we've been fairly successful in overcoming it.
Darren.
Yeah, there's this phrase that here sometimes people use called the war for talent, and it really is a global war, right? The kind of talent that we're looking for, as Marietta mentioned earlier, is talent that's got these incredible interdisciplinary skills, whether it's from the information technology aspect or biology, biochemistry, engineering, and that talent is in high demand everywhere. One of the things we have to remind ourselves here, and I think Hoosiers have this sense of humility that's charming, but we have to remind ourselves that we're actually pretty darn good at this stuff, okay? I was asked by someone not long ago when we were talking about the Research Institute, how could we ever hope to bring world-class talent to Indiana? And I said, well, I actually see it when I walk down the halls on a regular basis, so I don't think we'd be shocked to see more of it. We'd be delighted to see more of it. We have to remind ourselves that there really is a lot here. But we also have to remind ourselves constantly that we can't take this for granted because everybody else does want it, as you mentioned yourself earlier, John.
We are talking about Indiana's life sciences industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Marion, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm calling from rural Indiana near Rochdale, Putnam County, and I've called before, but I am living in an area, and in Indiana, I'm not so happy with what's been happening with the life sciences, with animal agriculture and agriculture in our state. I was just visiting Fair Oaks this weekend at their grand opening, and they're tooting high technology, and the greatest way, which, as an animal advocate, I know animals belong on pasture, and I think their science is for production and efficiency only, but they cloud the fact that they're, you know, industrial, they're bringing jobs in. I see the pharmaceutical industry promoting the confined animal feeding operations. I work with Hoosiers for Healthy Animal Agricultures. We're trying to put a ban on these. 70% of our antibiotics go into this. I see Purdue. I see everybody supporting an industry that I live in Putnam County, northwest Putnam County, and I've watched 300 acres just be destroyed for corn and soybeans, and we're not doing a good job. I mean, I listen to the 1% of the agriculturists that say we're feeding the world. We're not. This corn is going for ethanol. This corn is going to divert food crops for livestock. And I don't see Purdue or Eli Lilly or anybody helping the common people. Like, why doesn't Fair Oaks take their high technology and help the existing CAFOs live in the communities? They're destroying. Industry is destroying my land and imprisoning my animals. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Marion. David, I'll let you have the first crack at that one.
Well, I don't agree with it. You know what we see here, and I'll talk a little bit about the food side of this. We have in a company like Diagra Sciences, a company that is really committed to trying to figure out how it is we're going to feed billions of more people in the world over the next coming 25 to 30 years, and that really means having better food and making better use of the acreage and the land that we have. I actually think that Indiana farmland is going to benefit from all of that quite a bit in the future. I think it's going to be a lot less about energy of coming off the land and a heck of a lot more about food.
Oh, so in some ways it's like we're reverting, you know, skipping back to before the Industrial Revolution and becoming an agricultural center.
The state of North Carolina, we were recently in a session with someone from their biotech park who had these slides that he was talking about what all that they were doing in developing more food crops there, and he said the slides all said North Carolina, it's all here. And actually, one of our colleagues from Purdue looked at the slide and said, actually, it's not all in North Carolina. It's all here. It's in the Midwestern United States. This is really the breadbasket for the world and will become even more that way in the years to come.
We're talking about the life sciences industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to take a step back because it strikes me that we really didn't talk about why the life sciences in general have exploded in the fashion that they have. We talked about it specific to Indiana, but we're responding to a much larger need. Darren.
You know, that's a great point, John. You know, one of the things that many of your listeners may or may not be aware of is in the past 10 years, and in fact, really just in the past 5 years, there's been a true revolution in biology, right? So as Marietta said earlier, at the outset of the show, it's the science of life, right? So mm-hmm. And it really is at the level of the cell and the molecule. Cellular biology and molecular biology have exploded in growth. There have been new insights that have just been astonishing. If you were to pick up your textbook, if your listeners are of a certain age, say my age, and you picked up your
college talk about my age, I won't go there.
If I picked up my college textbook, as I did not long ago, in chemistry, and my college textbook in biology, and showed it to my daughter, who is a pre-med student down at Indiana University in Bloomington. She got a pretty good laugh at it because it's frankly just so out of date.
So those stone tablets are really
They hold up well over time. The learning didn't, though. And so really the reason you're seeing so much of this is because the underlying science has changed so much. We now have so many more insights to how living beings evolve over time, how the human physiology, plant and nutrition. Those fundamental areas of science have been under enormous change.
Well, and how much of this is also, we're seeing it obviously in the way that we have to plan for retirement and all of that, but we've now had to make adjustments all the way along. The fact that, by and large, if you make it to a certain age, say 60, mm-hmm. 65, the chances that you're going to make it to 90 now are pretty good if you get past all of the, infant mortality and all of that. Those kinds of challenges. Has that created some of the demand for this attention to life sciences? Because, we have challenges to face now that we've never had to face before. Marietta.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. I couldn't agree with Darren more about how, for instance, just medicine is becoming much more personalized. We're understanding the malfunctions at a cellular level, at a molecular level, and that's exactly why you need this multidisciplinary and interdisciplinary approach. So, for instance, once we understand things at a molecular level, then immediately when you try and develop technologies, you're talking about nanotechnology, very, very small devices and that can attack the problem. And the more we know, of course, the more our ideas just explode about what you do about the problem because you have so much more understanding about it. And so I think that it's a revolution, and it's actually from an educational point of view and a scientific point of view, it's just really, really exciting to be part of it and
to
watch
know,
that all happen.
I teach in the communications field, and I know similar thing.
Exactly.
It's both exhilarating and terrifying, and that what you were teaching a week ago is out of date now and obsolete. We've gotten
not a Purdue joke.
A question from okay. We are talking about the life sciences industry on No Limits, and we got a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air. Do companies utilize any recruiting policies to target Hoosier students at Indiana universities for the life sciences industry as a way to combat brain drain in our state? David Johnson.
The answer to that is yes. There are many programs that are designed to do that. Our great universities, such as Purdue and IU and Notre Dame, have put in place. But we also have a lot of, Indiana has about 39 or 40 higher education institutions, four-year institutions and above. And interesting, you're mentioning it because they're all really redoubling their efforts. This is an area where there are jobs that are going unfilled. We are a great state in producing talented young people, and people are working very hard.
Yeah, I know it's a priority at Franklin, too. We
very,
have a lot of those.
Very much so. Yeah. Franklin is a good example, actually, the school that's working on that.
Darren.
John, another issue that companies like Lilly and others are working on is the absolute critical importance of K through 12 education, right? So, you know, before kids get into college, before they can start to apply, it is essential that our Hoosier children, no matter where they go to school, have access to the best teaching materials and the best teaching environment, particularly for science and math. And frankly, there are a lot of great efforts underway. Lilly and others are helping to fund and actually provide materials for that remind people that remind kids that this stuff is fun. I mean, what you heard from Marietta is just that in her voice. I mean, this is fascinating stuff, and it's fun, and kids should actually love it.
And I would be remiss if I didn't connect the dots here, because in the STEM initiative that Darren has just mentioned, Purdue is the university that is the manager of that initiative that Lilly and Lilly Endowment and others are working with very closely in this curriculum.
We are talking about the life sciences industry here on No Limits. If you want to send us an email, question by email, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. Gotten a question from a listener named Sam, who says, how will the Manchester University College of Pharmacy in Fort Wayne impact the industry in Indiana? I'll throw that one to Darren or anyone. David?
You know, that's a great question, let me just give a quick anecdote. So a couple years ago, this is before Manchester got its grant, but a couple years ago, both Purdue and Butler received significant grants from Lilly Endowment to expand their schools of pharmacy. A year later, a company called Medco was looking to locate a new specialty pharmaceutical distribution company somewhere in the Midwestern United States. And when it came down to it, their main requirement for where they were going to set up shop, huge company, today owned by Express Scripts, so it's an even bigger company, but their main requirement was, what state can we go to that has enough pharmacists that can work for us? And the fact that Indiana had two schools of pharmacy, now three, puts us at a tremendous advantage, economic advantage, over most other states, many of which don't have any at all. So that is a workforce that has a tremendous upside potential for the whole industry.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Rochelle, who says, how can we hope to attract the talent you were talking about when the state is so obviously against homosexual people and tries to prevent women from making decisions about their own bodies and health? Do those policies, Darren, as a major employer, and I know Eli Lilly has taken a stand on a lot of these issues.
Lilly has definitely taken a stand.
Is that a disincentive?
Yeah, we want to make sure that every employee at Eli Lilly and Company, no matter what their race or sex, sexual orientation, gender, or whatever it is that they actually bring to our workforce every day, we want to make sure that there's nothing in the environment that actually prevents them from contributing in every way that they can and being happy here. You know, our employees are with us for only so many hours of the day, and then they have to go home to their families and they're part of the community. And we want our employees to feel fully as though they're citizens, valued citizens in the community. We know they are, and we'd like to remind all of our colleagues throughout the state that we have an awful lot at stake here to protect all the interests of every employee, every citizen in the state.
What other things do we need to do to make this state attractive to the kind of talent that the industry needs? David?
Certainly we need to continue to focus even more on education than we have.
Is that the big thing? I mean, the school system and all of that?
School system, but also at all levels. So looking at continuing to look at vocational education, higher education, funding our research institutions, which is an asset that we could never produce if we had to go out and start Purdue or IU today, but they are here now and they need to grow. The other thing we need to do is I'm very impressed with what Governor Pence has done in the sponsorship of the Biosciences Research Institute. The state needs to understand and underscore that this industry is important. It's sometimes challenging for states to talk about specific industries, or they don't want to feel like they're picking winners and so forth in that process. this industry has built this state. This industry will build the future of the state. And Governor Pence in particular has been outspoken in saying that in a number of settings around the state in recent months. And it helps. It helps to bring people's attention to it. So never underestimate the power of a good message.
We are talking about the life sciences industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are David Johnson of BioCrossroads, Darren Carroll of Eli Lilly, and Dr. Marietta Harrison of Purdue University. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indiana's life sciences industry. My guests are David Johnson, who is the president of BioCrossroads, Darren Carroll, who is vice president of corporate development at Eli Lilly, and Dr. Marietta Harrison, who is the associate vice president for research at Purdue University. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hi, great to be on.
Thanks.
I guess I just had a, if you don't mind, I actually have a two-part question.
Sure.
So one aspect is, it seems that Indianapolis, we seem to have one of two options from what I can see. Either we can make policy changes or try to make it a better breeding ground for existing companies to grow, or make it more suitable for other companies outside to come here who currently aren't here. And so I guess I wanted to know, certainly I've heard you guys talk about, you know, infrastructure and recreational things to do for recruitment purposes and better school system. But at the same time, I wanted to know, like, concretely what policies are going through the I guess, state house or Senate, and what we're actively doing right now to actually make that happen. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks very much for the call, Jason. Well, I'll throw that one to David, who actually has some background in state government as well. So
I'll start, and then I think I'm gonna move to ask Darren to continue on the second part of this. One thing we haven't talked much about is not just the attraction of companies, but the starting and growth of companies. Indiana's life sciences sector started by people like Colonel Eli Lilly and Reverend Depew and Bill Cook and Dane Miller and other people who built companies. We need to be building more. And part of what we've all worked on together, Purdue, Lilly, many others have been involved in this, is trying to bring more talent and more venture capital to work with the universities to try to start new companies. Those don't happen overnight. They're not easy. They're not
And how much how much money is involved in that? I mean, if you're starting a company, is it something that, you know, if you've got an extra $10,000 sitting around somewhere, you can do
it's more than that.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to get at.
To be a full-fledged company, it's a heck of a lot more than that. But it, you know, it starts with a $50,000, $100,000, $500,000 going in to bring a company and a team together. Darren and I serve on a couple of seed fund investment committees and a couple of other advisory committees for venture funds here that are really working to do that, and Purdue's an investor on all of those funds as well. So that's one part of it. The other thing to your caller's question really does go to the Biosciences Research Institute. Darren described the structure of that, and I'm gonna defer to him to elaborate on this point. But the purpose of the institute is to say, look, we already have companies here that are spending, this is a big number, $6, $7, $8 billion a year on basic research. They're spending a lot of it with Purdue and IU, but they could spend more. And if we had an institute that brought more of that talent here, and if we could just get 5, 6, 7% more of that research and development spend here in Indiana, that's $200 to $300 million that would be on this landscape every year, driving all kinds of productive economic activity. It's actually a very simple metric for why this institute makes so much sense.
Darren.
You know, the second part of Jason's question was, what concretely are we doing in the state to try to advance some of these companies? So I think the most recent and really one of the most exciting things we've done in a long time is get the state to be a full partner with us in the creation of the Indiana Bioscience Research Institute. This institute got the full support of Governor Pence, actually back when he was running for governor. Mm-hmm. So he has stayed with that. He's gone past the sort of the talking point, and he's moved into the doing point. We had great support in both houses of the legislature, and the state put down $25 million as, I guess you could call it, seed money to get the research institute started. The Lilly Endowment stepped up and put in another $10 million, and right now the industry players who are part of this are now working to come up with what we hope quickly will be the rest of the money to get to $50 million in startup capital. That is very concrete. Now, as David said earlier, this is the kind of long-range thing that takes time. Mm-hmm. But the research institute itself will be...
When you say long-range, how long are we?
Well, you know, the institute itself will take a couple of years to get up and running to reach kind of a steady state of maybe 6, 7, 8, 9 laboratories, major laboratories, with 100 or so employees. But beyond that, you'll find collaborations that now become possible or more possible, more fruitful between the industry players and the academic players, between the industry players and each other. I mean, one of the things that this has shown, actually, is that there may be new opportunities for collaboration between companies that really didn't see many opportunities before. And that actually, again, all has to do with what Marietta referred to at the very beginning is this convergence in the science.
Well, and I think that one of Jason's sort of implied questions, too, this area of interest and all of that, what do your students want to go in? What are they interested in? What parts of this industry do they want to be part of the most?
Well, of course, at Purdue University, we have a great breadth of students. So we have, kids in agriculture who are very, very interested in you know, tomorrow's crops and all of the engineering that goes into that and the more efficient production of crops. We have, of course, great biology, and so we have kids that are very interested in medicine and all kinds, and of course a pharmacy school at Purdue is one of the top ones, and we're very interested in the pharmaceutical sciences, and then of course the engineers drive Purdue along with the strong analytical chemistry and physics that we have. So they want to contribute. That's what they want to do. And John, that's a real, I'm glad you mentioned this point. It's a real kind of paradigm shift, I think, in education and students nowadays. They want to learn, but they want to make a difference. They want to be contributors. They want to be something that makes life better. And we see it time and time again. And so I think this is a perfect fit for the strong industries that we have in the state, because we all have the same goal.
We are talking about the life sciences industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can do what this listener did and send us an email. She doesn't want to give her name, but says, can you address the growing roles of contract workers in the industry? You keep mentioning the amazing wages, but I know a lot of people struggling to pay off college loans on contract salaries that are half of what they would make being paid directly by the companies, and these contract companies are small, which means their health care costs are very high. Recent college grads could make a much bigger impact on the economy if they could pay their bills and move out of their parents' houses. Darren, I'll start with you on that one.
Yeah, one of the things that every industry has learned over the last 20 or 30 years has been that you ought to stick to the things you're actually good at. We have learned at Lilly, for example, that there are a number of things that we are just truly world-class at and that we have to stay world-class at. There are a number of other things that we do, different parts of our operation, that are actually best done by other people. We're really not the best at doing all of them, and we came to recognize that a long time ago. So we have partners at every stage of discovery and development and manufacturing and sales, commercialization. So there really is no part of our business that is unaffected by this. I think that for each of these companies that may have folks who are perhaps in lower wage jobs, there are other companies that, frankly, have contractors that are in some very high wage jobs. I think it's difficult to make a very broad statement about everyone in a contract position and have it apply fairly across the board.
We are talking about the life sciences industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Kenny, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to say to address what the impact of this industry and their innovations have on the overall cost of healthcare. You know, we've had a lot of attention in trying to bring the cost of healthcare down. And at the same time, what these innovations, in essence, provide for us, we're hearing these are great jobs. They pay a higher salary than average. And they also mentioned Warsaw, which has a lot of orthopedics, and they've been criticized regarding the cost of their products. And so that leads me to the additional question, will the federal regulations in the Accountable Care Act adversely influence this industry?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Kenny. Darren, I'll let you start with that one.
Well, the industry actually has a lot of different elements, right? It's not just pharmaceuticals. Of course, we have folks in the state, as Kenny points out, who are creating implants and other devices. But just to take one part of it, pharmaceuticals account for a little bit more of than a dime out of every healthcare dollar that's spent in the system today, right? So that's a fact that's probably actually not as well known as it probably needs to be. And for pharmaceuticals today to do their job, they've really got to be better than whatever the alternative is. So some drugs will actually help a patient get out of the hospital sooner, actually help a patient avoid hospitalization. Some implants will actually last for years and years longer than some of their previous implants. So what you've got to look at really is what is the alternative cost to the individual and to the overall system, and then how much of the overall system cost is that? I think most of the studies that have been done actually demonstrate pretty conclusively that these can be great values. Does every single product actually measure up to that? No, and those are the products that actually generally don't do well.
We are talking about the life sciences. If you want to connect with us via email, do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. We've gotten a question, email question from a listener named Jane, who says, many of the kids in my children's high school don't believe in evolution and stay away from science in general. Please comment on the conflict between some Christian religions and teaching science. Marietta, I'll throw that one your way.
Well, I think there certainly is a conflict. It's certainly a matter of national discussion. I think one of the interesting things is that the head of the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, who's a renowned geneticist, is also a very religious person and has written actually a book. And it's very interesting about how he doesn't really see a conflict. So I think there's more common ground, actually, than these polarizing comments kind of make. But it is an issue. I will say from a scientific point of view, certainly, that it's very important to understand evolution. I think it drives a lot of things. I think it increases our understanding about who we are and how we kind of explain the world. There are other points of view, but scientifically, I think we certainly need to be a strong, in education anyway, be strong leaders in teaching evolution.
Yes, David, and we've gotten a tweet that's on a similar vein, so I'm going to throw that one to you as well and let you take both of them. This is from a listener named Justin who says, how big an obstacle is the legislature's focus on hyper-conservative social issues to recruiting talent and money?
Any agenda that gets into social issues is probably challenging for recruitment of talent. A number of states have seen that, and we always try to hope in every session of the legislature that those issues can be minimized and left to the social and religious places they belong rather than as matters of legislation. I just have to comment, as someone, I've actually written a book on this topic myself, having to do with the convergence in my own experience of religious belief and scientific participation. The scientists that I have come to work with and the people that I know at places like Purdue and at Lilly, if there is anything that they have, it is humility about the complexities of the issues that they are facing and the challenges that science can now attack, and a belief that the world is a complex mechanism, very difficult to understand, where there are no easy or formulaic answers. And I think for anybody on either the so-called science side of this debate or the religious side of the debate to claim that they have all the answers to that and that the other side cannot inform it is incredibly short-sighted. Again, I see no conflict at all in the people that I work with. And I believe if people understood the type of science better and the evolutionary mechanism better, frankly, as Christians, I think that they would be pretty excited by this discussion rather than repelled by it.
Well, and Darren, I'll throw this to you, is the perception that there's a conflict there, a problem for us that we have to address.
I think the issue probably is more one of whether that perception works its way into the educational system more than anything else. I think if as long as the educational system is teaching science as we best understand it, within the home, parents will want to and should be teaching their values and the way they view the world as best they can to their own children. Let each home actually work that part out. Let the public education system actually work through the best science available and the best math and give kids the opportunity to get the best instruction from the parents.
We are talking about the life sciences industry here on No Limits. Roger, welcome to the program.
My pleasure.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, my daughter has a bachelor's of science from the civil engineering department. And she, that's all she has. But she also has my wife's looks and my wife's brain. And she is now the regional manager for Gunite Cement in Seattle. They're tearing down a perfectly good bridge. That's a joke. Bill Gates has that money, and so he can tear down that perfectly good bridge in Seattle because there's a fault line running through it, or there's a slump line running through it. And my daughter is going to take that drill that has been shipped over from New Zealand. Yeah, the Japanese and the Chinese were involved in it. But it's 300 feet long and it's 60 feet wide. And they're going to drill from both sides and they're going to meet perfectly as they did with the railroads and the Golden Spike. That wasn't a Golden Spike. It was just painted gold. You know that. Anyways, they're going to meet and my daughter is going to fill that thing with gunite cement. And she has a Bachelor of Science from Purdue.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Roger.
My pleasure.
Certainly. So, obviously a bit of a plug here for Marietta. I want to talk and Purdue University from Roger. Thank you very much for that call, Roger. I guess what I would like to do is we're getting very, very close to the end of the program here, and we haven't gotten to really what are the challenges in front of us? What do we need to do? In, say, 30 seconds apiece, what do you see as the next big thing we're going to have to step up? David, you take the first crack.
I'll pick up from your last listener's wonderful story. We often are producing really terrific four-year college graduates who still may not be quite ready to work in this industry. And so as a state, we need to think more about getting many of our most promising graduates, some of the technical qualifications, some of the technical writing, some of the things they have to be able to do to hit the job running in these complex companies early. We can do that, but we need to start thinking about the issue in a better way.
Darren, big challenge that's stepping up.
David mentioned earlier that you can't work in this industry very long without being humbled over and over again. And you learn that in the pharmaceutical industry, the device industry, elsewhere. What that tells me is we have to make sure that we're constantly focusing on creating the best environment we can for the people who are willing to take that kind of risk.
Marietta, I'm going to give you the last word.
Well, thank you very much. So I think the big challenge and the big opportunity is actually the Indiana Biosciences Research Institute that we're trying to establish here. And I think that their funding is a big challenge. I think the benefits are just terrific, but I think probably getting that off the ground is huge.
That will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, David Johnson, Darren Carroll, and Marietta Harrison, for joining us today. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.
Thank you.